It's so great to be here. As some of you may know, but many may not, Reverend McClay, and that's the last time I'm calling her that this morning, and I met in Divinity School our second year and became fast friends, best friends. Since that time, however, we have never lived in the same city. We almost did once. It was a close call. Currently, we are making plans to retire in the same town if we can just get our husbands to agree. And as our parallel lives would have it, both Liz and I moved again this summer to opposite coasts, of course. In May, my family and I shut down our apartment in Mumbai, India, where we had lived the 2 previous years. And then sold and cleared out that house in New Jersey to move to San Francisco, where I now serve as the senior minister of the First Unitarian Universalist Society in that city. Moving for both of us, and for any of you who have gone through it, it entails going through decades of our things. For me, it has felt like some kind of midlife review. I recommend it, and I don't. As part of the process, I did come across my favorite stuffed animal from childhood, lots of sports awards, including most improved player, which just meant that I started out pretty awful that year. I also found a whole bunch of elementary school report cards, most of which included some comment about how I talked too much in class. And I would like you to know that I posted that on Facebook, and most of my colleagues replied to say that they too had had that comment on there. So clearly, ministry is where people go as grown-ups who talk too much. I'm really sorry about that. It was great to remember all of this, remember that sense of pulling our limbs back together, remembering the wholeness of our lives, and then this powerful opportunity to step back and look at it all, at life so far. I had been away from church the previous 3 years. Before our move to San Francisco, it was time I took consciously to write and to read and to be with my family and in my life in a different way. And it was a huge luxury and a huge gift to us all. We got to reconnect to our family in India and have an adventure. You wonder, though, when you step away from something, sometimes whether you will step back into it or lose or forget or reject it entirely. There was an article this summer in the New York Times about gap years, and in it, a father who warns his son that if he leaves college for a year, he will never go back. It's an understandable worry. Sometimes stepping away is a more monumental decision than we know at the time. Sometimes we don't go back. And so it was with me and church, ministry, this profession, the only one I knew and loved. However, stepping away, I wondered if I would feel the need to step back in. And interesting stepping back in now, reflecting on why and how I'm drawn back. What pulls me, what pulls all of us back here? Many important commitments we make in life are, in fact, ones we do not make or choose just once. Maybe we tell ourselves that things just are the way they are, but it might be better to recognize that we do actually choose and choose them again. We do, in some sense, choose every day to walk back into the same friendships, to remain and recommit to the same life partnerships, to show up at the same office, or not. There is some powerful recommitment that happens, and maybe a lightening of whatever burden comes when we realize that we choose these things. That we choose our political party every time we vote, we choose to be vegan or a locavore every time we shop or order at a restaurant. Powerful to remember. And we choose this place. Every Sunday we get out of bed and point our feet toward this church. Why? Why then do you, did the generations before you, why do we choose this? Well, what's that old joke? If you ask a community of Unitarian Universalists something, you'll get more opinions than there are people in the room. So I am sure that there are a number of reasons why people in this room come here. But probably also there are some themes. I think we come for community. For what those of us who are visitors this weekend have already been lucky enough to experience. For that spirit of incredible welcome and warmth. For people who, as that old Cheers, you know that show Cheers had that song? People who are always glad you came and eventually know your name. We come here because we value this web of connections that get woven partially by showing up and then more deeply when we get involved, a place where joys are doubled and sorrows are halved. Increasingly countercultural, we yearn for places of interconnection, places where people want to be interdependent and want to both ask a lot of one another and offer a lot of themselves. Community sounds nice, of course. It can also, as we all well know, be a wild, maddening three-ring circus some days. Theologian Renita Weems says of church folk, we are, quote, a ragged bunch of miracle workers. Ragged because we are often contentious, scared, lazy, undependable, and in a word, flawed. Miracle workers because we've had to take straw and build a cathedral of hope for every generation that crossed our threshold. Yes, a ragged bunch of miracle workers. But we do build these cathedrals of hope. And we all know that the beauty of what we make together makes up for the discipline of finding our way through. I'm sure you can all think of some quintessential moment when you knew that this was worth it all. Rallying around a family who is trying to make it through tragic loss. I know you're good at that. Walking shoulder to shoulder to City Hall to advocate for values that are not incarnate in your world. I've read your history. I know you're good at that. Seeing the couple that you watched in their early courtship stand here and bless a baby and ask you to be that village of care and commitment that helps raise that child, that shows them compassion and justice, that will love them as much as they love the child. You know these moments. I'm sure you have your own to add to the list. Community is one of those enduring reasons that we come together. This kind of community, right? Bound together in deep promises and disciplined life together. A commitment to love each other through it all. What else? The part that drew me in when I first came to church was that here was a place where people were asking the questions and talking about the things that no one else was asking or talking about in the ways they were here. In the cynical, hard-driving New York City I grew up in, the church I stepped into had people crying and singing the most vulnerable lyrics of yearning and fear and hope. It was like the walls came down inside that building and we started talking about what mattered most for once. Here was a place where we were asking each other what we should do with what Mary Oliver calls our one wild and precious life. What is justice? What is virtue? What is courage? What really matters? What do we let go of that the world tells us matters, but it doesn't? All the questions that poet David White says have the power to make or unmake a life, questions that have no right to go away. And in our tradition, too, there was this strong strain of asking constantly from generation to generation who was left outside this embrace of love and how it was we were going to change that. The mentally ill treated like animals, women disenfranchised, people held in bondage. As the Passover Seder reminds us, there are always places of bondage and liberation to be done, and here we were talking about it. This was a community that took introspection and self-criticism seriously, and we did it because the cost of not doing so was to be part of the pain, and because it was to be unfaithful to the call to universal love that was our heritage. So if you're like me, you come for community and its wild and gorgeous realities, and you come because you know this is a place where together we will make sure to ask all of the really important questions and be pressed into wrestling for an answer. Finally, I think we come because we know this place will ask us to live our truths, these truths. A colleague of mine once said that she thought church was fundamentally about this, about being a place where we practiced being the kingdom of heaven. I don't actually remember if this colleague was a UU Christian or not, but she chose her words carefully and to make a point. The kingdom of heaven, of course, is this mythical place, the one where lions lie down with lambs and swords are beaten into plowshares and love and justice reign and there's milk and honey for all and no one goes hungry or unloved or alone or forgotten. All of our talk of ideals is important. All of our thinking and our dreams of landscapes unbounded is foundational. It helps us paint this picture of our ideals, the ones we're aiming for. But of course, it's the living of it that matters. And increasingly, I'm in agreement with my colleague. Church's purpose is to be a place where we practice living into that ideal. It's our training ground. It's our laboratory for the human spirit. Here we tell all the stories of our wild saints and martyrs, St. Martin Luther King Jr. and St. Emerson and St. Dorothy Day and St. Ida B. Wells and Jesus and the Buddha and even St. Darwin and Galileo and Santa Rigoberta Menchú, all of the free thinkers and the big lovers and the visionaries and the prophets. We tell them so we have real life models for how we might choose to be in the world. We tell all kinds of tales, even in those in which history has morphed into fantastical myth, and we tell them again and again to each other because, as William Trevor rightly observes, somewhere in the entanglement of exaggeration and myth, there is this whispering insistence that human goodness is what matters most of all, however faint it is the sound worth honoring with the benefit of the doubt. And in so doing, we renew our commitment to risk on a goodness in humanity that we can't always see. We are people who promise to be together in good times and in bad, who covenant to be a safe harbor that welcomes liberal religious seekers to replenish and expand the spirit and mind, to honor one another's gifts and minister to each other and translate all those words into action in the world. We say all that, and then someone calls us and asks us to bring a casserole to a family that's lost a loved one or welcomed a child, or go with them to speak to the governor, or get our church ready to be a sanctuary to welcome the refugee or the immigrant, and we're off to the races. Church, our training ground for heaven on earth. Everyone invited. Here we ask the big questions, the ones our life really depends on. Here we pledge to test our answers with nothing less than the choices we make every day. We remember the power here to choose love and how we will love, and kindness over cruelty and courage over fear, and joy over cynical despair. Here we live into the dreams of unbounded landscapes, dreams vast in abandon. So there will be no saving of souls in this place, brothers and sisters. I'm sure of that from reading your history and meeting you. This is the place of spending souls with lavish hand, plowing our souls into this world until they bear fruit, spreading them like seed or sunshine, right? So that they're all among us to nourish life on fertile or rocky soil, casting them out like that sticky string into the world so we can catch every last thing we touch. We will practice it here and in places like it all over this world so that we get good at it. And then, as has been true since the time this place was founded, it is something, all that practicing, something we will take with us everywhere we go, catchy like a summer cold, infectious like laughter. Our purpose is to bless the world. From what I hear, you know how to do that. 300 years of knowing. So blessings in the next chapter. Blessings in your life together in this little slice of heaven.